It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
This is the Fox News Rundown Extra. Elisa Brady. Weight loss was already a multi-billion dollar industry. Now, anti-obesity drugs that began as treatments for type 2 diabetes are beginning to make their mark, including Ozempic. Wegovy, a high-dose version of Ozempic, was the first approved by the FDA for weight loss in 2021, followed by Zepbound, a new version of Mounjaro, last year. Drugs that help with hunger by imitating hormones that would normally help regulate appetite after you eat, satiety hormones. Both versions target a hormone known as GLP-1. The drug in Zepbound and Mounjaro also targets a second hormone. All of this getting more attention recently when Oprah announced she was leaving the board of Weight Watchers after disclosing she was using a weight loss medication, though even Weight Watchers now has plans that include medication. In a recent Pew Research Center survey, nearly 3/4 of Americans had heard of Ozempic, Wegovy, and similar drugs, but more than 1/3 think they'll do not much or nothing at all to reduce obesity in America. We spoke with celebrity fitness trainer Jillian Michaels, who's also a certified nutrition and wellness consultant, best-selling author, and businesswoman, taking a deeper dive into the science behind the drugs and the bigger picture on health and wellness, including why people are so hungry and the root causes the drugs don't address. We made some edits for time and thought you might want to hear the whole thing. Thanks for listening. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the Fox News Rundown weekday podcast. Now here's Jillian Michaels on the Fox News Rundown Extra. Hi, Jillian Michaels.
Yes, how are you?
Hello, I'm great. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Thank you so much for doing this. We greatly appreciate your time.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
They probably told you it's recorded. It's not live.
And yes.
I'm going to dive in with a bunch of questions. Is that okay?
Absolutely.
Okay. So, broadly, it seems like this year has started out the way the last one ended, with a lot of talk about Ozempic and other drugs like it.
Yeah.
Should we be worried about that in terms of overall health and well-being?
In my opinion, based on the data, the answer is absolutely yes. And there are a myriad of reasons why. Beyond the potential side effects that these drugs, you know, can hold, the fact that they are not in any way a permanent solution, and they are not only essentially denying the underlying factors of why the American population is becoming more and more obese, they're arguably confusing the issue, if that makes sense, you know, by suggesting that obesity is a medical disease, which I find fascinating because it seems to have cropped up post-1974. Where was this disease just several decades ago when, you know, if you look at the early 60s, 5% of the American adult population was overweight or obese, whereas now it's 75%. So, I mean, that's a quantum leap in genetics. What happened? So there, you know, for all those reasons and more, I find it to be very alarming.
There's been such a boom in drugs like Ozempic for weight loss that analysts at Goldman Sachs are actually projecting it'll boost overall economic growth. But part of the reason for that being is people miss fewer days of work, and the costs of poor health care, the costs of poor health are reduced. Is this something that's sustainable, though? I mean, they don't recommend staying on these types of drugs forever, correct?
No, they do. Oh, they absolutely do. They say it's a lifelong commitment. So if we were to look at these drugs in detail, right? And what I've done now is, instead of getting into this scary warning label on the back of the cigarette box, I like to paint you the most optimal scenario. So let's say you're one of the 50% that has zero side effects.
You're not nauseous. You're not constipated. You're not bloated. You're not throwing up. You don't have the more nefarious side effects of thyroid cancer, kidney failure, gallbladder issues, vision loss, muscle loss, bone loss, and on and on and on, right? Amazing. You lose a good amount of weight. Fantastic. As a result of the weight loss, other biomarkers will improve, not because of the drug, but because of the weight loss, which is also fantastic. Now, what all of the studies done on these drugs have shown us is that somewhere around 68 to 72 weeks, you will plateau. There are a host of reasons for this, but bottom line is you plateau. So at some point, right, you have to find a way to not be as hungry. And we can get into why people are so hungry, because that's what these drugs do. They impact appetite on the gut-brain and essentially curb your hunger. So you eat less. By eating less, you lose weight. And that's how these drugs facilitate weight loss, right? So at some point, when they stop working, you got to figure this one out on your own. Now, here's the thing. If you get off of it, all of the meta-analysis show us that the vast majority of individuals put all of the weight back on and then some, two-thirds in the first year alone. And again, we could get into all the reasons why this happens, and I can explain it to you all if you'd like me to, but that's what's happening. So if you said to me, hey, Jillian, what do you think of Accutane, which has got, oh my God, the scariest side. But the thing is, you're on it for a finite period of time, and it's in large part a permanent cure to debilitating acne, right? What do you think of Chantix, which is a drug people take for smoking cessation? It's got a 35% success rate, which is extremely high compared to other avenues to quit smoking. You're on it for a finite period of time. Yes, it has crappy side effects, but smoking will absolutely kill you. You eventually get off of it, and there's a good chance you'll be done with cigarettes. A 35% chance. With these drugs, you never get off of them. They do stop working. And we simply do not know what this looks like in 10 years, 20 years. We don't know. And the drug companies say, oh, we have tens of thousands of hours of people being on these drugs. Wegovy, which is semaglutide, at a higher dose than Ozempic, which is the one that was FDA approved for weight loss, was only approved in 2021 for weight loss at that dose. And the way the drug companies are responding to this plateau is by creating what's called a double agonist or King Kong triple agonist. So essentially, these drugs mimic satiety hormones, right? And there are many different satiety hormones. GLP-1 is just one. So what other pathways can these drugs act on, right? It's like, ah, damn it. We've plateaued on this one, or it didn't work for that person. Well, this one works on two satiety hormones. Ah, hold on. This one works on three satiety. So we just keep pushing the up button on dose, on the different pathways it's working on, the different agonists, different hormone agonists. It's incretin hormones that they are impacting. At some point, there is a brick wall that you're going to slam into. And I wonder.
Hey, it's Clay Travis. Join me for Outkick the Show as we dive deep into a mix of topics. New episodes available Monday to Friday on your favorite podcast platform, and watch directly on outkick.com/watch.
What happens then? And then the most important part of this conversation that we're not discussing is that you can just eat less and just move more, and you will get better results.
How do people do that? Why are we so hungry? How do we change it?
Now you're asking the right questions, right? These are the things we need to be looking at. So first, let's look at the physiological component, right? Our bodies we're homeostatic. We have a bunch of different homeostatic mechanisms, meaning, right, if you look at your body temperature and you go outside and it's 52, your core temperature is not changing. If you go outside and it's 110, your core temperature is not changing. Your body is set up. The pH balance of your stomach from a cup of coffee versus alkaline water is not going to change. You are supposed to regulate your hunger, right? The idea is, oh, okay, you know what? You've eaten enough here. You're good. There are a bunch of different mechanisms in the body that are supposed to take over and tell you, stop eating. So the question becomes, well, why is that not happening? Okay. Well, what's going to trigger these satiety hormones like GLP-1 or cholecystokinin or leptin? What's doing it? Well, sleep. Okay, great. That's one way. Hydration, fantastic. That's another. But protein, fat, and fiber are what are going to have the biggest impact on releasing satiety hormones, right? And that's what's going on with GLP-1 is a satiety hormone. So when we're eating things like soda, okay, let's think about this. You go to a ball game and you get a really large soda, and it's probably 250 calories of pure processed sugar. There's no fat, no healthy fat, no fat at all, but healthy fat is obviously very important. There's no fat, there's no protein, there's no fiber. So none. You've now taken in 250 calories of energy, because a calorie is a unit of energy. It's the same thing as saying a pound of feathers is the same as a pound of cement. We're not talking about the nutrients in the foods. Energy is energy. So you've now taken in 250 calories of energy, and not only are you not having any release of satiety hormones, the opposite happens. You release a ton of insulin. Your pancreas goes, oh my gosh, there's so much sugar in the blood. Dump insulin. This is dangerous. And you become hypoglycemic. You have a sugar crash because it quickly drags all the sugar out of the bloodstream until you become type 2 diabetic, which is a different conversation. And you're insulin resistant because your body has been releasing so much insulin for so long, you're no longer able to recognize it. But now you're hungrier. That's the sugar crash, right? And in addition to that, these foods are also designed to smash the dopamine center of our brain, like nicotine, cocaine. They're highly addictive. So they not only do not release satiety hormones, they make you hungrier, and they're psychologically addicting. That's the second part of this conversation. Why are we psychologically hungrier than ever? And I would venture to say, in a world where, you know, we're trapped behind a desk all day long, most people aren't even going into the office anymore, which a lot of people think is a good thing. I don't necessarily agree with it. We're socializing less and less. Everybody's existing behind a screen. I mean, we're stressed out. We're anxious. All these things are going on. Bottom line is, we're lonelier than ever. We're more stressed than ever. We're more anxious than ever. And we're seeking coping mechanisms. Hence the reason people turn to things like alcohol, sex, nicotine, all of these different drugs, right, that are releasing dopamine. We want to drip dopamine. We don't want to dump dopamine. These foods dump dopamine, and we become addicted physically, psychologically, for all those different reasons. And you have an insatiable hunger that's like a runaway freight train. Enter Big Pharma to capitalize on it. But who's creating the problem? Big food. And then you've got all the societal factors that I just mentioned.
Well, we have an obesity crisis, right? So obviously trying to tackle that is a very tall task, especially when you have celebrities like Oprah admitting, oh, by the way, I'm using a weight loss drug as well, it turns out. Does that make it harder to try to convince people to, you know, that that's not the easy way out and think about the actual, you know, alternatives to changing your eating habits and your lifestyle? How do we do that?
You know, here's the thing. If this was an easy way out, I want to be very clear. I would take it. I would capitalize on it professionally. I would take it personally. Most of the weight loss industries are selling these drugs. If you look at apps like Noom or companies like Weight Watchers, they're in the business. I would get in the business. They have a massive fitness app. Very easy to do. And guess what you need with these drugs? You need exercise because you lose muscle at an alarming rate. So if it was an easy way out, I promise you I would take it. And I say this because it isn't about judging people for being lazy, being weak. No, it's because I think it's the exact opposite of that based on the data. So it is concerning because there are certain individuals that are obviously very influential. Now, with that said, Oprah might love this drug. She's not a health expert. She doesn't claim to be. She's not an MD. She's not a PhD. And she's not somebody like me who talks to MDs and PhDs all day long because that's my business, right? That's what I do. It's my passion. It's my work. It's you know, what I do in my own life, obviously. So she might think like this is the second coming. And, you know, I don't judge her for feeling that way. My issue initially was the fact that it wasn't disclosed, her financial investment in Weight Watchers and the fact that they were financially incentivized to sell these drugs. I have subsequently heard, I think, that she's stepping aside from Weight Watchers, or I'm not quite sure, so don't quote me on that. But that was my issue is, you know, whenever we are doing something, we have to disclose it. I've invested in a nutraceutical company. I sell collagen, right? I have to tell that to you. Hey, I like collagen a lot. I take it for these reasons. By the way, I sell collagen. You got to tell someone that so they understand and they can do their own homework on the things you say. But it's somewhat discouraging. More discouraging is not the celebrities because it's not their responsibility. They're not out there saying, I'm a health expert, I'm a doctor, I'm a scientist, take this drug. It's the medical community itself. That's really where I'm feeling let down, and not by everyone, but by many. And I think it's because of the way our medical system is set up, and healthcare is an industry. Obesity is a massive industry with a compound annual growth rate of over 9% a year. And as you mentioned, these weight loss drugs are arguably the best-selling drugs in the history of pharmaceuticals. It is a huge, huge business.
I wanted to ask you about the body positivity movement because it, you know, promotes a positive view of all bodies, all body types, all types of people. There are popular plus-size influencers who are part of this. Does this movement go too far, though, if it disregards the dangers of obesity?
Denies science? The answer is, of course it does. Now, here's the thing. Once again, this is a counter-reaction to the prejudice, without question, and the judgment and the shaming of people that are overweight. Without question, we know that there have been biases against overweight individuals. And the response to that is, you can't hurt me with this. I love this, right? And it's the same way, I'm going to venture to go way out on a limb here, but personally, I feel it is the same way that other minorities will embrace slurs because it's like, you don't hurt me with this word. I own this word. You know, whether it's the gay community or the Black community or you know, I've seen it a million times, Jewish community, of which I belong to several of these communities. My point is, and I've been guilty of it myself in the gay community, is that it's so hurtful that you're like, I love this, actually. Like, you don't get to weaponize this against me because I love it. And then you have virtue signalers, all of whom, by the way, are the ones that ended up on Ozempic. That, you know, are arguably unhealthily underweight, but it's great for everybody else to be overweight. You go, girl, right? And those people are just out to be liked. And that actually super pisses me off. The scoop, super duper skinny. You know, I jumped on Ozempic at the first chance, but it's okay for you to be overweight. You go, girl. I hate that. Or corporate America that is exploiting this movement in order to virtue signal, that's just infuriating. The people who are overweight, though, that is my personal opinion of what's going on there. Now, with that said, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, and everybody does have value. And in fact, the only way to make any positive change in your life is to believe in your heart and soul that you are worth it and you are capable. But denying the health risks of being overweight and obese is where this goes too far. And that's when you get into the healthy at any size dialogue. And that's extraordinarily dangerous. And I find it, quite honestly, obesity is a, quote, medical disease to be equally as nefarious, because you are essentially victimizing somebody. You're saying to them, this is totally out of your control, right? And it feels good for a moment, because you don't have to take any responsibility for the state of your health. Oh, I have a disease. And I see it across the board, right? PCOS, hypothyroidism, obesity. I have a disease. There's nothing I can do. You're absolved of any responsibility. However, when you take off somebody's boots, they can't pick themselves up by the bootstraps. And that narrative is a lie. So we're playing on that part of their psychology to then sell them a dangerous drug as the only way out of the problem. Both narratives are incorrect and deadly dangerous.
One other thing, and it is kind of a broad question, but if someone is struggling to make a change in health and fitness for themselves, what is the best way to get started?
Okay, there are several different elements. The first thing we need to tackle is the simple science of weight loss, weight maintenance, and weight gain. And it is irrefutably, without question, calories in versus calories out. I'm not talking necessarily about the optimal diet, right? There's a diet that's now become quite famous called the Twinkie diet, done by a professor of nutrition. And he illustrated that by simply eating less crap, you lose weight and you improve all your biomarkers. Shocker, just like Ozempic. Is it ideal? Of course it's not. But it's, you know, one Twinkie is better than two Twinkies. And the reason is because it's less calories in, right? So that's the conversation. Calories in, calories out. Are there certain foods that impact your metabolism differently? Yes, that's the calories out part. That's folded into that equation. But nevertheless, the simple math is really important, because when somebody is inspired, right, they're like, I'm doing it, I'm taking the chance, I'm putting myself out there. There's so much conflicting bullshit information, hope I can say that word, sorry, out there, that when they go and they make the effort, and it is work and it is sacrifice, so you better see your results at the end of that road, right? If they're doing something incorrectly, they're not going to get the results they want. They're going to get discouraged. They're going to give up. They're going to throw in the towel. So the simple how-to of weight loss is absolutely critical that people understand. If I was to look at one benefit of these drugs, I would tell you that they have proven my point. People are losing weight because they're taking less calories in. And guess what? They're doing it in menopause. They're doing it at any age. So I think I'm like, yay. I mean, it helped me prove those two points I've been trying to make for two decades. If I could chalk up benefits, those would be the only two. But luckily, you have other PhDs and MDs brave enough to weigh in on the debate here that it is, without question, including biochemists from Peter Attia to Ruben Meerman to Lane Norton. And I got a biochemist, an MD, and a PhD, all very well respected, validating the fact that without question, it is a calories in, calories out conversation. The next part of this equation is looking at the addiction to the processed foods. And this is where a PhD like Dr. Anna Lemke, who specializes in understanding the dopamine addiction, right? She has a fantastic book called Dopamine Nation. You have to detox from it. You do. And it takes about 30 days to literally detox from these foods, because they are so psychologically and physically addictive. And it's going to kind of be a hell ride, and you sort of need to prepare for it. Once you get through that part of it, you need to look at the psychological components of why you are driven to eat. Is it loneliness? Is it anxiety? Is it comfort? Is it a coping mechanism? You know, for certain people who dad bod, you know, I got kind of apathetic. I got stressed. I got overwhelmed. I got bills to pay. I got depressed. You know, can you improve those things? via results and exercise and community and culture, one would hope. Usually, yes. But there are people where the issue, in particular with individuals who are morbidly obese, the issue is far deeper. And this is when, you know, you could be dealing with an individual who is an incest survivor, right? And who has put on the weight to try to desexualize. They're not even, by the way, necessarily aware of this. I could list an example of a contestant I worked with whose parents were both overweight, morbidly obese. When he lost the weight, his father also lost the weight, but his mother didn't. And she felt that he was abandoning her, and she emotionally withdrew from him. What did the food provide? An emotional connection to his mother. What happened when he lost the weight? A primal abandonment. There are deeper things, which is why weight loss is so simple. Oh, it is simple, but it didn't tell you it was easy, because it's not. And these are the reasons why. And this is where I would strongly recommend taking the $800 a month you're spending on Ozempic and getting a fantastic therapist at $200 a week for a session and doing some deeper work for a while, if the issues are in fact that deep.
Jillian Michaels, celebrity fitness trainer, New York Times bestseller. Thank you so much for spending some time with us.
It's absolutely my pleasure. I really appreciate being on.
Such great information. It was amazing to get to talk to you. We appreciate it so much. And hopefully we'll talk to you again.
I hope so. Thank you. Have a great day.
Take care. You too. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Kilmeade. I want you to join me weekdays at 9 a.m. East as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and, of course, what you think.
Listen live or get the podcast now at BrianKilmeadeShow.com.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Janice Dean, Fox News senior meteorologist. Be sure to subscribe to the Janice Dean podcast at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And don't forget to spread the sunshine.